G'day, this is X-Band the Phantom Podcast. Our website is chronicalchamber.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via YouTube or through your favourite podcast apps. Do not forget to give us a rating on your podcast app and tell a mate about us. This is episode 268, and we are going to talk all about the Bundaberg Art Gallery in country Queensland. So it's just myself, but we've got some special guests who are going to tell everyone a little bit about it. There's going to be some videos. So if you're like me and you haven't been able to check it out, this is the podcast for you to go to. So first up, we have Rebecca, who is going to join us. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm great, thanks, Jermaine. How are you?
Yeah, very good. It's summer, so it's starting to heat up, but what better way to beat the heat than to be in a cool gallery in more ways than one and to have a look at some Phantom stuff.
I couldn't agree more.
So as for those who are on video, they're going to see a wall, a fantastic wall behind you. Am I correct in saying that you are actually in the gallery as you were talking to us?
I certainly am. So at the moment, I'm actually sitting in our large gallery space, which is where Phantom Off the Drawing Board, the majority of the exhibition, is sitting. And actually what you can see behind me here is the part of the exhibition that is a recreation of Shane Foley's studio. So we've got in that a number of obviously original drawings and little quirky things that Shane has around him while he creates his comics.
Yeah, one of the things I loved in there is there was a note from his wife on one of them, and then there was another one about how he had to call such and such person about this or something like that.
Yeah, we did. Look, I should say Shane said a wonderful thing to me because he was on site as well. I was curating the space and pulling that particular space together. And he said, I really like how you've made my studio look. Could you recreate the recreation of my studio back in my actual studio? So it was quite a funny little comment. But, you know, we wanted it to get that sense as much as possible of what it's like to be in the space. It is obviously a recreation, and Shane will be the first to say that. But we have built in little parts out of his studio. You can see the drink bottle that he uses. You know, there's all these little quirky characters that sit around the space, his little TARDIS, and then, yeah, the drawing board that you referenced. So when I was putting that together, it's actually got a lot of the drawings and sketches on it. And I said to Shane, I need your voice in that space. So he had his little memo. So I gave him a memo pad when he's here. I said, what type of notes would you have for yourself on your desk? And so he added those into that for me. And, yeah, one of them's actually phone Glenn from Fruit to pay my invoice. So, yeah, we sort of he had a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek at that one. He thought Glenn would probably enjoy that one on the opening weekend. But yeah, so it's really a great space. We've also included in there the light box, and the light box that Shane uses to recreate. Also, what I wanted to do in that particular section about Shane's studio was really build in him as a person, because the exhibition itself obviously explores other Phantom illustrators. I know we're going to chat about that, but it was about that story of Shane that sits behind him, what people know as the illustrator. So, you know, his amazing wife Helen, his boys, his career as a ambulance officer. So we also have little Polaroids throughout it as well. There's a little film that shows, which has Shane talking about it with different, you know, parts about little, you know, live film of him. So little bits that tell this story of him as a person.
And I've also seen that there's some audio sections. So, like, for instance, like with the rings, and then he's recorded like a minute or so of him talking about the rings and what they symbolize and stuff like
totally.
That.
Totally. Look, one of the things that's really important for me is obviously accessibility. So, you know, we want everyone to be able to understand. But there were so many stories that Shane told as we were developing this exhibition together that I thought I need his voice telling them. So we recorded, I think there's 8 QR codes around the gallery that you can scan, and you'll hear audio of Shane talking about them. So the rings was a great example of that. Being fairly new, as you know, to fandom, didn't really realise the impact of drawing the Phantom, the good mark ring, because you obviously, and the skull ring, because you have to always have that certain fist the correct fist has to be punching or doing the right thing at the right time. So Shane talks about that, you know, just that those concepts as an illustrator behind the scenes, what goes through his brain. And I think that's a really interesting part about this as an exhibition.
So I guess probably the most obvious question is, why Shane? Why the Phantom?
Yeah, great question. So I'm gallery director here at Bundaberg Regional Galleries, and as part of that role, I get to curate, you know, large exhibitions that tell a story about our artists. But I'm also really keen to show that our artists are known not just here, but they have a place on a national and international scene. We have amazing artists from this region. So I met Shane first in 2016, and I think, like a lot of people, was a bit blown away by that story of him being the ambulance officer by day, Phantom illustrator by night. He's a very, you know, there's a little bit of a superhero story about that anyway, let's be honest. And the more I got to know Shane and his wife, Helen, particularly, I just thought we need to tell this story. People are always blown away. I, you know, present at conferences and things all over Australia and talk about the arts and some, you know, what's a quirky fact. I said, you know, one of the, you know, really well-known Phantom illustrators lives in Bunbury. Like, what? So I thought, we have to tell this story. It's a really interesting one. So yeah, that's why Shane. So he lives here in our region. And I wanted to tell that, but as I needed to make the exhibition, I get attract audiences and wider audience. So as I spoke to Shane about it, and also Paul Maloney, who has been the collector that's really supported this exhibition for us, it came a lot about the illustrators' history with Phantom and how the illustrators have each put their own bit of a mark on the drawings and on the character and the storylines. And so that was actually the story that came out with the exhibition as I developed it. And so, yes, there is definitely that story of Shane, but there's also putting him in that bigger context of the Phantom illustrators. So, and also the Phantom in Australia and that really unusual, you know, connections it's had in Australia with the Australian Electoral Commission, you know, the Condomain campaign, and then also the Papua New Guinea, the war shield. So there was all these other stories that I wanted to weave in as well. And I feel good. I feel like we've managed to do that a little bit.
So was it something that just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew until what you've got now? And was there much that you had to leave out, like, no, stop, let's stop, we can't do everything?
That's a really good question. So I know quite a number of your watchers and listeners have visited already, and we don't have a huge gallery. We have a decent sized regional gallery, but it's not the biggest. We're not talking about a state sized gallery. So I had to be really careful about what I put in. I needed it to tell Shane's story, but I also needed it to have enough other parts of the exhibition to attract that broader audience. So yes, long answer to say, yes, there was lots I had to leave out, particularly with the illustrator's history as well. We were very lucky. As I said, we work with Paul Maloney, who does collect, you know, the original Phantom illustrations. So I said to Paul, like, if you're a collector, what would you want to go and see in a gallery? And so he sort of spoke to him about who was really significant in his eyes. So we've obviously got a really early Ray Moore here that's signed. And then we move into the Wilson McCoy pieces. So Paul had a lot. I'm going to say, anyone who's met Paul has a lot of stuff. There were a lot more things I could have put in. So I had to sort of pick it out to those pieces that were just really key to telling the story. And so we looked at that. So with the illustrators, then we also very lucky through you guys. So thank you. Made the connection with Cy Barry, of course, in America. And through his son, David, we were able to loan original artworks from his private collection that are now on show in this exhibition as well. So it was really important to tell those stories in here. And I had a wonderful chat to Cy and David over Zoom as on the exhibition opening weekend, which is a real highlight actually for me of this whole process. So we had to keep going. We had to pick some Australian illustrators we wanted to showcase, and then the current illustrators, and then into Shane. That there was a lot. Like, and I actually had to say to Paul Maloney on the opening weekend, I could have tripled the amount that's in here. There was a lot. It was really hard. And I was really anxious that I hadn't put the right things in for the fans. But feedback so far has been that it's been great. So fingers crossed everyone's happy with it.
Yeah. Well, I guess for those who don't know, and Paul's not one to toot his own horn publicly, privately he does. But publicly he doesn't. But he's probably got, I would say, probably the largest and most impressive collection in definitely in Australia and quite possibly the world.
Yeah.
So
unbelievable. And I just love that he'd say things like, I'll just go under the bed and see what else I can find, you know. So it was a meeting of the worlds when Paul got to come into Gallery World and we started to put our gloves on to touch all of the things that he hides under the bed normally. So
yeah, well, I think
great. And I will say Paul also connected with us with some other amazing collectors throughout Australia who also loaned works for the collection and collectibles that he didn't have. So a huge shout out and thank you to those collectors as well. They enabled us to have like the first three. Sam Allen, I believe it is, had the first three through comics published in Australia, so we were able to have those here. We also had, and apologies, I can't think of the collector's name off the top of my head, but some of the big rings collectors showcased.
That would have been Gary Horn for the
it
rings.
It was Gary. Yep.
Yep. I believe John Cookson lent a couple of items. And I believe there was another ring by the brother of Mick Strawn, I think it was.
Yes, there was. See, I needed to do this with you. You've got those on the top of your head. I missed that. But, yeah, no, look, there was great. And they were amazing. They were just so generous with what they loaned us. And we really have been incredibly thankful to all of the lenders for their generosity in lending us things for the exhibition. And we needed to have those other elements in. You know, it was great to have the illustrations, but we wanted to tell those other stories as well in there. And there's certainly a lot of interest in it as well in those other parts to the exhibition.
So just to recap, you had Friday night, which was kind of like the shindig where you can all dress up fancy in your frocks. And and I'm hoping Paul was in his purple suit.
No, he refused to wear his purple. He refused to wear his purple suit. And he did get heckled a bit because he also refused to wear his Phantom tee, which was quite a contentious move on a weekend of Phantom fans.
So how was the Friday night? Was it good to kind of?
Yeah, look, it was amazing. It's a huge, and I guess it's that moment where all worlds collide when you collide with Gallery World. Curating something like this is huge, and I really couldn't do without the team that I work with here at the galleries. We have, for those, I think a few people were surprised, we have about 3 days to bump out our old exhibition and put this one in. And that for this one, of course, also meant building in Skull Cave walls and fully painting and hanging and installing everything. So it was a huge week, and we got to Friday night, we thought, right, we were all just ready to celebrate. It was a wonderful, wonderful night. We had over 300 people attend just for the opening night for the 2 hours. Oh, wow. And just great to see people's response as they walked through, and just it felt right. I have to be honest, I was so anxious thinking, what if these Phantom fans come in and I'm just, you know, vilified because I've got this really, really wrong. I was so anxious that was going to happen, but they weren't. They were a very forgiving crowd. So big thank you to them. And I didn't, you know, they were a really lovely crowd to get to meet. And it was a wonderful night. It was a really, really great night.
And so Saturday day as well, you also, that was the official opening, I believe.
It is. So Saturday, we really wanted to have that idea about a bit of a, you know, getting to meet the artists, because the whole thing for me is always about, you know, the artists and the people behind who you don't normally get to meet. So we did have artist talks that day. I met first with Paul Mason, who, of course, people would know as a Phantom illustrator as well. But at this, for the gallery, he has worked with us. We have a space called Imagine Arts, which is a children's gallery space. So it has an activity component, but really curated exhibitions for children. And Paul worked with our team here, particularly one of my staff, Jess Newitt, and we brought Kid Phantom to life in that space. So it's been totally recreated into a jungle and into scenes from Kid Phantom, and talking about storyboarding and that whole process with young people. So Paul spoke first about that, and his partner Amanda also contributed to that, about where they're going with Phantom and what Kid Phantom meant. And then we had Paul Maloney speak, who I think was still just very upset because he'd been pipped at the post the night before about some unscratched scratchy that turned up, someone brought on opening night. I don't know whether that story's made the rounds yet.
No,
but,
I don't believe it.
Oh, look, it was great. I actually realised the depths to which fandom goes on the Saturday when Paul was devastated that someone had turned up on Friday night. And because he was busy, of course, doing the official parts with me, one of the other fans pipped him at the post for an unscratched phantom scratchy. And it was obviously, you know, in my lack of knowledge, I just blew me away that was actually a thing. But it was quite, so that was, so anyway, Paul Maloney, who entertained us all, I think, for a good 45 minutes with being Paul, which was wonderful. And
45 minutes, you got him to talk for 45 minutes.
I said, probably 20 minutes of that was how disgruntled he was about losing out on his scratchy. So, but no, I do tease. He was wonderful. And we did have a few good laughs about the whole process. As I said, it was a whole learning curve for Paul as well, working with the gallery. So it was great. And then as part of the space, I also wanted to, and I know I think you alluded to it in one of your earlier podcasts, you know, there's been quite a few exhibitions where people have responded to the idea of the phantom. We wanted to build that in here as well because I like the idea of bringing it back into the arts. So we have a phantom response exhibition that sits alongside this main exhibition, and the artists that were here for opening weekend all spoke as part of that as well. Nice. So that was really great to hear, you know, how the phantom is still contributing to the arts scene in the big contemporary arts world. And finished off with the amazing Shane Foley, who drew a big crowd. So it was a great day, lots of merchandise sold. I love those fans that were queuing from 7:45 in the morning to get the first phantom shirt off the rack. So it was great.
Well, that's one way of making a demand, is knowing how many fans there are and then releasing less than what there are. So then they are all scrambling and doing their best to try and get it, because if one of them miss out, they're all completists and they will not be impressed.
Absolutely. Look, I will say, for those listening who did miss out, we have just done a second run of T-shirts. They have completely sold out our first run, so they are available for anyone looking for a possible phantom gift for Christmas, and we are able to post those out. So, there was all that great merchandise that was produced alongside the exhibition, and we had, of course, signings happening with the artists as well that people loved.
Awesome. So while we're talking about the merch, there was invites, there was catalogues, and of course you said there was some I think there was a magnet as well and a shirt. I know Duncan talks a little bit about the high quality print job that you did with those.
Lovely.
If people are interested in those, just what's the best way for people to
So, look, we do have all of those products available through our gallery shop. We don't at the moment have an online presence with that, but you can ring the gallery, or if you look us up, our details are either on Facebook or the www.artsbundaberg.com.au website, and you can phone our wonderful gallery staff and purchase those over the phone, and there's a standard shipping that we just charged on those. But, yeah, so there's catalogues, which are one-offs. There's also the phantom tees, which are, you know, Shane's design that he did for us for this exhibition, the magnet also, which is Shane's design for this exhibition, and, and, look, the invitations and those sorts of things. I'm sure if you order from us, like, we usually are throwing in a few little freebies in there. So there's a little bit of enticement for people to order at the moment.
Awesome. And we'll have those details on our show notes as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Now, a couple of personal questions, if you don't mind. What's your favourite piece? Or I'll ask that question. And then your second question would be, what's your favourite response piece, if you're allowed to have a favourite? And I know it's like choosing your favourite kid. but let's be honest, we've all got a favourite kid. So I'll just some of your favourites, if you don't mind.
Okay, so favorite piece in the actual exhibition. Now, it's going to be tricky. Look, I think for me, I would have to say the side Barry pieces for me were special because I got to stand in front of his pieces and speak to him and hear him tell me his stories behind those as artworks, and knowing how significant he was in the development of the way that the Phantom looks, I found that a really quite a surreal experience. And coming into fandom, obviously only recently, the importance of that and the significance of being able to do that wasn't lost on me. I think they are particularly special for those reasons. I really love, we did a section on Diana and, well, actually we did a section, I shouldn't say on Diana, we did a section on what if the narrative changed, times that women have put the Phantom costume on. I liked that little section, and Shane very generously redrew some of the Wilson McCoy scenes with when Diana put the costume on and also when Julie did. So he redrew those, and we've got those in. And I like there's one image that he's redrawn, which is when Diana's all, you know, she's suited up and she's in the jungle and she says, Diana is looking for adventure. And I just thought, you know, there's something about it that it just appeals to me. I just really, really liked that piece. So, but as I said, it was Shane's, as he gives credit to Wilson McCoy for that original. So I think those, I mean, I love Shane's work, and I guess it's not one piece with Shane's. I love that whole concept of knowing him so well and just being able to sit and be surrounded virtually by his work is amazing. But yeah, I would have to say, if I had to pick favourites, it would be probably that piece with Diana looking for adventure, and also those Cy Barrys, just because of the significance of what I got to experience in meeting him through this exhibition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's,
and what about what about some of the response pieces?
The response pieces, my favorite piece is actually one of the artists that responded was one of our traditional owner. We have four traditional owner groups here in Bundaberg, and one of our well-known artists who actually lives in Brisbane is Dylan Sara, and he's Tarabalang Garangarang, and I've been lucky to work with Dylan. He's kind of got a strong trajectory in Australia as an artist. And he recreated the Phantom as First Nations. What if the Phantom, you know, what if this was reversed and this is how it was? And there was a piece in there. So he did a series of four works. And I just really like that, once again, that idea about playing with the narrative. And the last one is that the Phantom gets the girl, so he gets the Diana, you know. And I hadn't really thought through my experiences with Phantom when I was growing up. I mean, I read it. I had male cousins who used to get all their Phantoms and read them. And but it was that I remembered that. I thought, oh, my God, I was so invested in when, you know, they were together in the comic. And, you know, it wasn't until his piece arrived that, wow, that actually really got me. It got me quite teary. I thought, this is what I loved about it was that thing. That's what I loved about comics, this whole other world that you went into. And, so that was – and I was very lucky because he did actually gift me one of those pieces. So it was really lucky, you know, special moment for that. But so that piece particularly, but I did have a complete fangirl moment when I got to speak on the phone with Reg Mombasa, though, being a child of the 80s and also 90s with Mambo, and then obviously living in the 80s, I was like, wow, that's cool. You know, just picked up my phone and this guy says, hey, it's Reg. And I said, oh, hi, did we meet? So, you know, it's Reg Mombasa. I'm like, wow, that was such a really cool moment in my career. So, and his pieces have, of course, been really popular. People have wanted to come and see those. But I've loved working with all of the artists in the response exhibition. And for anyone coming to see the exhibition, please take the time to go and have a look at the response works. They all have taken that story of the Phantom in their own directions. And I'm so pleased it was something we included.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty about the Phantom, and what I've enjoyed about the Phantom as well, is that you can see, you know, a comic strip that has permeated in everything. You know, like there was some cross stitch of, you know, Phantom ladies. There was and it was just like, you know, that's what makes the Phantom special, is that he's a comic book hero, but he became he's such an iconic character in Australia that, you know, he can be a cross stitch. He can be something crazy like what Reg Mombasa does. Then there's this, with a poo shooting dog, there's also, you know, a phantom totem pole or something like that.
It's amazing. And I think what I loved about it was I don't know much about, you know, DC Marvel, but I feel like that the exciting thing is the fandom has let people respond. So, you know, I know that there's controls around it, but the fandom has actually, people have been able to respond. He's been part of artworks for a really long time in a different way. And I just have really loved that. And I guess I didn't know before this exhibition about the way the fandom had been used with First Nations communities to talk about, you know, legal services and voting and, you know, family court. And then obviously the safe sex campaign with the, you know, iteration known as Condom Man. And then obviously the war shields from New Guinea. Just those sorts of things have just, that actually really made me fall in love with the story and the character even more. Yeah, and I'm excited to show that. And so many people who have come through have known the Phantom comic but didn't know that significance in Australia, and I think it's something that we really should celebrate.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, yeah. It all sounds rather exciting. Now, for those listeners who missed the opening weekend and are really, really down and out, as we've said several times on the podcast, on our socials, it's still open for pretty much close to two more months. Can you tell us a little bit about the dates and the opening hours of the gallery and everything?
Yeah, of course I can. So we're actually open until the 4th of February, so the exhibition extends out to then. We will be shut from, we do a Christmas closure, so we are shut from the 22nd of December through to the 2nd of Jan. So, yeah, I do apologise for anyone hoping to travel during that break time. Unfortunately, it's just, yeah, the nature of the beast is that we are shut during those days. But we are open every day of the week. We're open 9:30 to 5 on weekdays, and we're open from 10 to 2 on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And as I said, if you, we're open all those hours for that. And if you do want something, particularly merchandise or anything like that, we're happy to do phone orders for that. You just need to go, obviously, to the show links and find that out. I really hope people will take the effort to come and see it. We've had a few times the question, you know, are you going to tour it? And because part of me and my passion in working in a regional gallery is encouraging people to come to us and see it. This has been created for us. It's been created for our space to tell the story of our artist Shane in this bigger context. So we want people to come and visit us and explore our amazing region and see this exhibition where it needs to be seen.
And let's see if we can get Bundaberg known as the Phantom Capital instead of the drink brand.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, please. Could we? I think that would be amazing. I would really like that. I love that that was, just for one whole little bit of time, we became known as the place for the Phantom instead of the place for other tourist things. So it's wonderful to have that. And a lot of people have been visiting and I've been really excited to welcome them into our space. What I do have to tell you is that I forgot to mention that we are also showing the Phantom serial. So we have a little, not theaterette, but a vault space. And we've recreated that, which is an installation space for art normally. We've recreated a little vintage theater in there, and we're showing the Phantom serial from, I hope I'm not wrong, 1946. There's a lot of episodes. It runs for 222 minutes. I think it was Duncan that was committed to sitting through it all. I thought, people are sitting there all the time. But what's lovely is it's really hot in Queensland in summer. We are constant 22 degrees in the gallery, and you can sit and enjoy that. And it's great. It's in black and white. It's a fun, quirky little extra part to the exhibition that I've loved including.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, look, I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you giving us a bit of an insight and what makes you tick, but also, I guess, learning that has helped us, I guess, identify what we can expect. Now, for those who are listening, stay with us because we're about to hear from Duncan, who's going to talk about his review, his thoughts of it as a consumer. And there's going to be some videos and some stills. And then I believe we've also got the audio from Shane from some of those audio grabs that Rebecca talked about as well. So we will include all of that. So we'll hand over to Duncan. Rebecca, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Yeah. That's been wonderful.
And lovely. Thank you for doing the Phantom.
Our pleasure. Thank you for being such great promoters. We've really appreciated that.
Awesome. Over to you, Duncan.
Cool. Hi, everyone. For those who came in late, my name is Duncan Munro, and Chronicle Chamber have asked me to share some thoughts on the Phantom Off the Drawing Board exhibition at the Bundaberg Regional Art Gallery. Opened a couple of weeks ago. It's opened out into the new year. If I could sum it up in one word, I'd say fantastic with a PH. And if I could sum it up with a thing, I'd say it's this invitation to the Friday night opening event. And if you look on there, you can see this little bossed skull symbol there. There's some great Shane Foley art on the front, and it opens up. Great quality card, breaks down some of the elements of the exhibition. And what this shows to me is that someone took care and passion to put this project together, to put this installation together. Same with the catalogue that was produced. Same great cover, same little embossed skull mark, Shane Foley art. And it's a beautifully produced book that's got pictures of some of the pieces that have been displayed, and some work in progress and some explanations behind some of the work, and some of the key elements from what is a very impressive exhibition. But just like the passion that's gone into producing that product, it shows on the exhibition as well. Very tastefully presented. It's a great space. It's been used well. The curator has chosen very carefully the pieces from Shane, Paul Mason, and other Phantom artists' contributions to display during the exhibition. And some really key pieces from collectors, and the pieces that they've chosen from collections around Australia are very unique pieces that you're only ever going to see there or at that person's skull cave. So it's fantastic that the public get to share in that. And what is parts of Phantom history are on display for the community to share. I use community because it was very much a community centric event. And it was just that the Phantom was the medium. The breakdown of it, as you'll see in the photos and presentations elsewhere on the website, is they had the main gallery with mostly original art and some of those key items from collections. They had this fantastic installation, Kid Phantom installation, with the support of Paul Mason, that had, you know, very creative space, had, you know, pencils and texters and how to draw guides. They had the Phantom, Kid Phantom video that Paul's students did a few years ago, playing on a big TV. They had Paul's art across the walls, and they had like painted art onto like a mural on the wall. And they had a massive comic strip with cutout characters, Kid Phantom and Diana and Garan and Diablo. And the kids could change that around and make their own little Phantom story, like a little comic strip. If you needed a bit of a break, there was a little theaterette that was playing the Phantom serial. And then upstairs, they had what was called the Phantom Response, and it was this great meandering space where Australian artists had been asked to provide Phantom inspired artwork. The space that was there enabled you to take your time through that and really enjoy each artist's voice for each of those pieces. And it was great to see that those different interpretations from people who otherwise would not usually have had the Phantom influence their work. Very different from those who have seen the Phantom exhibition that Dietmar did a few years ago. There was a massive spectrum of things to see and enjoy at this exhibition. On the Saturday, there was also an open space outside with a stage, merchandise table with stuff from the exhibition and or things related to the exhibition, and they had a couple of tables there where artists like Paul Mason and Shane Foley could sit and meet with the crowd and sign things and have a chat, and people got an opportunity to meet the creators. And the speeches that were there, the presentation, questions and answer sessions that were hosted there with a Phantom Response artist, Paul Maloney as the Phantom collector that had donated some key items to the exhibition, Shane Foley, Paul Mason. And I think on the Friday night, or potentially on the Saturday morning, Glenn Ford from Fru was there, and as a long time Phantom artist, was able to offer his perspective as well. And that outdoor installation, that outdoor space, was very much open to the community. People came and went, just walking past, that stopped to sit down for a while and rest and listen to what people were talking about and then move on. Some of them took enough interest in that to then go inside and check out the exhibition. And that's really, to me, what the event felt like. It felt like a community event. And it just happened to be about the Phantom, and it was made possible by the passion of the curator and all of the effort and talent that Shane Foley had put into his work and contributed to the show. It's got a very personal touch from him in there. They've mocked up a sketchboard for him. There's work in progress. There's an evolution of his work with Phantom across the walls. There's other artists represented on there as well. You've got that Kid Phantom centric area that features very heavily with Paul's artwork. And then you've got the other artists upstairs. I saw people from lots of different age ranges, everything from very young people to future Phantom readers, to very old people who just the community walking past and said, this looks interesting, I'll come in and have a look. There were people who were obviously visiting Australia who were coming through there just because they were visiting Bundaberg's, a big tourist community. And it was great to see that they took the time to stay, take photos, and engage with the installation as well. Most of them, from the conversations I was listening to, didn't know who the Phantom was, but they appreciated the artwork, and the space lent itself to be very inviting and very much a part of the community. So those are my thoughts on the exhibition. It was amazingly done. If you have the opportunity to go, I recommend it. It would be great if this could travel, but I don't think you could repeat that same the uniqueness that is the Bundaberg Regional Art Gallery. So if you have the opportunity to enjoy it and you are a Phantom fan, I highly recommend it. School holidays are coming up and it is Queensland. Otherwise, happy Phantoming.
It's amazing how well known the Phantom is in Australia and how popular he's been over the years. And even people now who don't read the Phantom, most, except the very young, I guess, know who the Phantom is and know somebody who always read him and collected him. And it's one of the anomalies of things. Why is the Phantom so popular in Australia? Because the Phantom currently in Australia is the longest running continually published comic book in the world. I'm pretty sure that's right. It's nearly up to issue 2000. The Phantom actually originated, of course, as a newspaper strip in America. But Phantom comics have never lasted long in America, like they have in Australia. Australia, Sweden, and India seem to be the big places where the Phantom is really, really popular. Why is that? Don't know, but we're glad he is. One of the really interesting things I discovered very early on when Fru first asked me to do a cover, not the first one, they said, we'll send you a PDF of the story so you can find the cover. So I got the PDF, open it up, and it's still in Swedish, which is really interesting. So I had to go through and find the scene that looked right, even though I had no idea what the actual story was about. A little bit later on, I actually got a Google Translate to go over it, and some of the way that translates is just hilarious. So sometimes you're really going on the visuals. You can't read the story and work it out from there. It's all about how the PDF and the illustrations look. When I'm working in my studio at home, it's really important to have a good workplace. And it's not just the art table, but it's a place to store the script you're working from. It's a place to store the artwork you're referring to. I've got it quite comfortable now. I have pens and ink everywhere. I have a rubbish bin in a convenient place. I can look up and see my first Phantom cover framed on the wall. I have a gorilla looking at me and a sloth behind me looking at me. And then nearby a whole stack of books where I can refer to things, particularly if I have to draw Devil, I find him hard. But there is a wonderful artist, American artist, who drew Conan the Barbarian for years named John Buscema, and he drew the most fabulous horses and wolves, and I'm often referring to him. So they're all close by in the studio. The amount of storage space you need is really quite amazing, because there's pages you're working on, pages that are not finished, pages that are roughed out but not done properly. You need place to put them all so you're not tripping over yourself all the time. And it takes a while to get that in place, but give yourself space. To get the Phantom's face right, it takes a long time, and I know most artists have a period of time where they have to experiment with how to make the Phantom look like the Phantom. Because if you do the mask wrong, it doesn't look like him, or it looks like a totally different sort of character. And we notice that the white part of his eyes, and it's always left white, it is now. It used to be colored flesh cover on the old covers, but now they leave it white. It's very triangular. How thick do you make the black part of his mask? And there's one big Phantom fan said, I always do a thin Phantom mask. And he says to me, you've never forgotten that he said that. I use the early Cyberry art as my go-to for how to do the mask. And actually, it follows, the top part of the mask follows your eyebrow line. And that's how you can make him look angry or whatever, by manipulating the mask a little bit. A strange thing occurred to me when I first started drawing the Phantom, because as we know, the Phantom has two rings, the skull ring on his right hand, but the good mark on his left. And of course, when I'm drawing, you suddenly realize, well, what happens when the Phantom punches somebody with his left fist? Why isn't the good mark left on their jaw? I looked around through the stories and I couldn't find a satisfactory answer to that. So my take on it is that I always have the ring being blank, as if he's turned it round. And the nearest that I could find the answer to that was, there was an old story where the Phantom turned his skull ring around so no one would be able to see it from the outside. So I'm presuming that's what he does with his left hand. Whether fans always like that or not, I don't know, but that's the way I currently do it. The first Phantom illustrator I really liked is one called Wilson McCoy. He was the second Phantom illustrator ever, and he actually was the assistant to Ray Moore, the very first Phantom artist, and then he took the strip by himself. And I loved his approach, and I still do. I still honestly think he does the most beautiful women of any comic artist ever, and I wish he had more respect. Because he had quite a simple style, he doesn't get a lot of respect in some ways, and he did repeat a lot of poses over and over again. But I think his brushwork and his style and the way he characterized the baddies was just wonderful. So I love him. And then when Cy Barry, the third Phantom artist, took over, his early work is just stunning, and that's often my go-to. With regard to Phantom covers, a cover usually tries to find an explosive or interesting part of the story to use as the hook to try and get people to buy the issue. Sometimes that's hard to find, sometimes it's easy. My very first one was easy because there was an episode where the Phantom was hallucinating that he was surrounded by and attacked by a lot of snakes. Well, that of course is a great image to have on a cover. Other times it's quite difficult. And there's one cover here where the Phantom has a hat on and a cloak and he's just marching forward away from a Shakespearean type village. That one was very, very difficult to find a scene. And actually, I just lifted the artist's own introductory scene because I honestly could not think of anything else to do. There's a couple of covers that I'm really pleased with. There's one where the Phantom's looking at a ghostly sailor on a ship. I like that one. And the other one is where he's holding a sword out to a pirate and there's a ghostly pirate behind him. I must like ghosts. And with that one, actually, I was really pleased with the back cover. The back cover has the Phantom in a trench coat in the rain, and there's the original Jungle Patrol at the bottom. I really like those two. The others are okay, sure. And there's one where there's a character called Sandal Singh, a femme fatale in the Phantom with an exploding helicopter above him. I'm pretty happy with those. Creating comic pages is something that I get the feeling a lot of people feel like it's a magical process. How does it happen? But it comes because you work in a few stages, and it does not involve just starting to draw on the actual page. Whenever I have a story in front of me, whether I've written it myself or somebody else has, what you first do is just go through and do a little stick figure comic. That's all it is. It's to pace out the story, to see how long it will be, or if you're told it's going to be 8 pages or 20 pages, to make sure you can get it into that space. Just little stick figures to try and pace out the story to see if it works. Then comes a stage where you get a bigger page and put a little bit of meat onto the figures and try and get the panel sizes right. And then you get the proper artboard and, using a light box, there's an example of one here, trace those panels lightly and those figures lightly onto the proper page and develop your drawings properly. But it takes a while, and you have to be able to, you're actually like a film director in many ways. It's not enough to be able to draw to do comics. You have to be like a film director and be able to pace it and change it, know when to do upper shots, down shots, aerial shots, long distance shots, set the stage for the environment so that readers know where you are. And it takes a while, and it's a matter of sticking at it and just seeing if the story works in the page allotted. And hopefully the examples here will give some idea of how it's done. One of the really interesting things I discovered very early on when Fru first asked me to do a cover, not the first one, they said, we'll send you a PDF of the story so you can find the cover. So I got the PDF, open it up, and it's still in Swedish, which is really interesting. So I had to go through and find the scene that looked right, even though I had no idea what the actual story was about. A little bit later on, I actually got a Google Translate to go over it, and some of the way that translates is just hilarious. So sometimes you're really going on the visuals. You can't read the story and work it out from there. It's all about how the PDF and the illustrations look. We've got a few pages here of one of the Swedish PDFs that I got. There's a few pages and of the snakes attacking the hallucinating phantom, and you can see just what it was that I had to work from. It's amazing how well-known the Phantom is in Australia and how popular he's been over the years. And even people now who don't read the Phantom, most, except the very young, I guess, know who the Phantom is and know somebody who always read him and collected him. And it's one of the anomalies of things. Why is the Phantom so popular in Australia? Because the Phantom currently in Australia is the longest running continually published comic book in the world. I'm pretty sure that's right. It's nearly up to issue 2000. Phantom actually originated, of course, as a newspaper strip in America, but Phantom comics have never lasted long in America like they have in Australia. Australia, Sweden, and India seem to be the big places where the Phantom is really, really popular. Why is that? Don't know, but we're glad he is. Creating comic pages is something that I get the feeling a lot of people feel like it's a magical process. How does it happen? But it comes because you work in a few stages, and it does not involve just starting to draw on the actual page. Whenever I have a story in front of me, whether I've written it myself or somebody else has, what you first do is just go through and do a little stick figure comic. That's all it is. It's to pace out the story, to see how long it will be, or if you're told it's going to be 8 pages or 20 pages, to make sure you can get it into that space. Just little stick figures to try and pace out the story to see if it works. Then comes a stage where you get a bigger page and put a little bit of meat onto the figures and try and get the panel sizes right. And then you get the proper artboard and using a light box, there's an example of one here, trace those panels lightly and those figures lightly onto the proper page and develop your drawings properly. But it takes a while, and you have to be able to, you're actually like a film director in many ways. It's not enough to be able to draw to do comics. You have to be like a film director and be able to pace it and change it, know when to do upper shots, down shots, aerial shots, long distance shots, set the stage for the environment so that readers know where you are. And it takes a while, and it's a matter of sticking at it and just seeing if the story works in the page allotted. And hopefully the examples here will give some idea of how it's done. The first Phantom illustrator I really liked is one called Wilson McCoy. He was the second Phantom illustrator ever, and he actually was the assistant to Ray Moore, the very first Phantom artist, and then he took the strip by himself. And I loved his approach, and I still do. I still honestly think he does the most beautiful women of any comic artist ever, and I wish he had more respect because he had quite a simple style. He doesn't get a lot of respect in some ways, and he did repeat a lot of poses over and over again, but I think his brushwork and his style and the way he characterized the baddies was just wonderful. So I love him. And then when Cy Barry, the third Phantom artist, took over, his early work is just stunning, and that's often my go-to. With regard to Phantom covers, a cover usually tries to find an explosive or interesting part of the story to use as the hook to try and get people to buy the issue. Sometimes that's hard to find. Sometimes it's easy. My very first one was easy because there was an episode where the Phantom was hallucinating that he was surrounded by and attacked by a lot of snakes. Well, that, of course, is a great way, great image to have on a cover. Other times, it's quite difficult. And there's one cover here where the Phantom has a hat on and a cloak and he's just marching forward away from a Shakespearean type village. That one was very, very difficult to find a scene. And actually, I just lifted the artist's own introductory scene because I honestly could not think of anything else to do. One of the interesting things about the Phantom, of course, is the age of the Phantom and Diana. Diana appeared on the very first panel of the very first Phantom strip in 1936. And as of 2023, she hasn't aged a bit. So she's 90, but still the same. The only thing we change really when drawing Diana is we try not to give her a 1930s or 40s or 50s haircut. Apart from that, though, she hasn't got many wrinkles. So she's ageless. Many people might not know that in the mid-70s, Diana and the Phantom married. And in the later 70s, they had their children, who are twins, Kit, the son, and Heloise, the daughter. And at this stage, Kit and Heloise are about 19. And so the question is, will they move forward and have a new Phantom, or will the old 90 plus years old Phantom keep going as a young man? It's interesting that even the writer of the Phantom, Lee Falk, played with the idea of a female Phantom way back in the 1950s, I think it was, where he had one of the older Phantoms had a sister named Julie, and she, in one adventure, put on a Phantom suit to save her brother. In the very next story, he had Diana dressing up in Julie's Phantom suit, and of course Diana got in trouble, but never actually became the Phantom. By trouble, I mean with bad guys, not with the Phantom scolding her. And so the precedent for having a female Phantom was set, and years later, readers have loved the idea of, will there be a female Phantom? The fact that the Phantom is meant to be the same man for hundreds of years doesn't seem to cause much of a problem, because maybe the Phantom can morph, we don't know, from male to female. And the issues come up again now, because as his children get older, both of them at various points have put on a Phantom suit to fight crime. And the question is, who will be the Phantom? Will it be Kit? Or will it be Heloise? And we have some examples here of both of them and the female Phantoms from various times. There's a couple of covers that I'm really pleased with. There's one where the Phantom's looking at a ghostly sailor on a ship. I like that one. And the other one is where he's holding a sword out to a pirate and there's a ghostly pirate behind him. I must like ghosts. And with that one, actually, I was really pleased with the back cover. The back cover has the Phantom in a trench coat in the rain, and there's the original Jungle Patrol at the bottom. I really like those two. The others are okay, sure. And there's one where there's a character called Sandal Singh, a femme fatale in the Phantom with an exploding helicopter above him. I'm pretty happy with those. To get the Phantom's face right, it takes a long time, and I know most artists have a period of time where they have to experiment with how to make the Phantom look like the Phantom. Because if you do the mask wrong, it doesn't look like him, or it looks like a totally different sort of character. And we notice that the white part of his eyes, and it's always left white, it is now. It used to be coloured flesh cover on the old covers, but now they leave it white. It's very triangular. And then the trick is, how thick do you make the black part of his mask? And there's one big Phantom fan said, I always do a thin Phantom mask. And he says to me, you've never forgotten that he said that. I use the early Cy Barry art as my go-to for how to do the mask. And actually, it follows, the top part of the mask follows your eyebrow line. And that's how you can make him look angry or whatever, by manipulating the mask a little bit. A strange thing occurred to me when I first started drawing the Phantom, because as we know, the Phantom has two rings, the skull ring on his right hand, but the good mark on his left. And of course, when I'm drawing, you suddenly realize, well, what happens when the Phantom punches somebody with his left fist? Why isn't the good mark left on their jaw? I looked around through the stories and I couldn't find a satisfactory answer to that. So my take on it is that I always have the ring being blank, as if he's turned it round. And the nearest that I could find answer to that was, there was an old story where the Phantom turned his skull ring around so no one would be able to see it from the outside. So I'm presuming that's what he does with his left hand. Whether fans always like that or not, I don't know, but that's the way I currently do it.
Now, fans, you've still got 2 months, just under 2 months, to attend this amazing expedition. It's in Bundaberg. If you are nearby or you can do a detour of 1 or 2 hour drive or something, go and have a look at it. You've seen the videos, you've seen people talking about it. It will be worth doing. I look forward to people commenting on how much they've enjoyed it. Now, if you are listening to us for the first time, I hope you've enjoyed that. Our website is chroniclechamber.com. You can contact us via chroniclechamber@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your opinions on our social media platforms or over the YouTube channel. If you have gone to this event and you've got some photos you want to share with us, please send them to us. You can subscribe to us via YouTube, via all through your favourite podcast apps, including iTunes and Spotify. From myself, happy phantoming, merry phantoming, stay safe, and have a great day. Bye.